case number 11-45L, State of New York, and L. Constituent, which is the Illinois Liberatory Commission, and L. Ms. Wagner, for State of Prairie, Iowa, and State Community District, Mrs. Bennett, for the Environment Improvement District, Mr. Radar,
Counsel.
Good morning, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court, I'm Monica Wagner from the New York Attorney General's Office, arguing this morning on behalf of the petitioner and intervener states and the Prairie Island Indian community. Your Honors, the finding of no significant impact in the NRC's temporary storage rule should be invalidated because NRC itself has found that leaks from spent fuel pools have the potential to impact human health. NRC relied on its lessons learned task force report to find that post-operation leaks will not have a significant impact because the leaks that have occurred so far have had only a negligible impact on public health. But that report did not stop there, Your Honors, and I'm reading from page 738 of the Joint Appendix. After finding that negligible impact from the leaks so far, the report went on to say, however, several of the reviewed abnormal release event scenarios did or potentially could impact groundwater sources relative to established EPA drinking water standards. That was a finding, a recognition of a potential impact, and as a result,
So is your argument that that should have triggered an environmental impact statement?
Exactly, Your Honor. That's exactly right. And Your Honor, indeed, based on that exact same lessons learned report, NRC has proposed to reverse its findings regarding leaks during the period of operation. As I think the Court is aware, those impacts are addressed in the generic environmental impact statement that NRC issued in 1996. Before it issued its lessons learned report on leaks. Originally that generic environmental impact statement found that the impacts of leaks were small and could be assessed generically. But based on the lessons learned report, NRC has proposed to revise that generic EIS to find that leaks potentially have a small to moderate impact and need to be assessed in a site-specific environmental EIS, the site-specific environmental EIS that's done when a plant applies to relicense. So we have.
Why wouldn't that be sufficient to take care of this concern? There is going to be an EIS on each one that's going to be renewed, right?
But only during the period of the only during the operation period. What's happened here, Your Honor, is the temporary storage rule is addressing impacts after the period of the operations for quite a long period of time, as NEPA requires NRC to do. That spent fuel that's generated as a result of a relicensing will have environmental impacts, and NRC needs to assess them.
Maybe this is a question better directed at your opposing counsel, but I'll ask you. I couldn't find anywhere in the record where the NRC explains why it is that an EIS would be necessary for the renewal, but not for the extension of temporary storage period. Are you aware of where that? Why there would be that distinction?
Your Honor,
Or am I just making your argument for you?
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor,
you're making arguing your case. Don't interrupt your train of thought.
I'm really looking for help whether there was something in the record that I just couldn't
find. Your
Honor,
I think the way to think about it, though, is that as a result of a relicensing, there's going to be 20 more years of spent nuclear fuel that will have environmental impacts. And what actually doesn't make sense here, I think, is for NRC to have sliced up the environmental reviews in the way it does. To say we're going to look at the environmental impacts of spent fuel during the 20-year operation period, and then take a second look at the environmental impacts of spent fuel during the 60 years after, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, in terms of spent fuel, it's going to stay on site now for, it looks like, possibly 80 years. And what would make more sense is to look at the environmental impacts of that for the entire period.
At least there's a common sense distinction between an operational plant and one that is not, right? So couldn't that be one explanation that you need an EIS during the terms of the operation of a plant, but maybe you don't need that for when the plant is going to be shuttered?
Not in terms of the spent fuel. That's certainly correct as to the operation.
Why is that?
Because the spent fuel is going to stay there and present many of the same risks. In other words, the day the plant ceases operation, all of the fuel in its reactors is going to go into a spent fuel pool and remain there for some period of time. Under the temporary storage rule, NRC has said
there's no greater risk from the spent fuel at that point than there is when the plant is operational.
I'd say at least at that point when the plant ceases operation and all the very hot spent fuel from operation is in the pool, there's probably actually a greater risk than there was.
Why is that?
Because the problem with spent fuel is it when it comes out of the reactor, it's very hot and very radioactive. And the whole reason it goes into a pool is in order to cool it down and then allow the radioactivity to start to decay. So,
don't they get cooler over time?
Yeah.
That's correct, Your Honor. It does get cooler over time. Yeah, go ahead.
So further out, they're less dangerous, aren't they?
Well, Your Honor, NRC hasn't made that assessment, and it's exactly the kind of assessment that needs to be made in an EIS.
Let me ask you a question about your argument that this can't be done generically. The agency's response is that they said when they made this judgment that they didn't need to do it site by site, that judgment includes their understanding that there are site differences, and they use conservative assumptions as a result. They use conservative numbers, which they say took account of the varying risk, and that's why they didn't need to do it site specific. What's wrong with that?
A couple of things. First off, Your Honor, as to leaks, NRC is saying that it's now going to do site-specific analysis of leaks for the period of operation. And it hasn't explained, it hasn't
done... Assume that for some reason although I don't yet understand the difference between the relicensing period and the post-licensing period. But what about my question that they're... About the reason they gave for doing this generically is that, look, we're aware that these places are different, but we use very conservative numbers, and so we accounted for the risk that way, which is a perfectly legitimate, I think, scientific way to account for varying risk, isn't it?
It is, Your Honor. But as to leaks, NRC found that they could have a potential impact. And it didn't do any kind of probabilistic analysis as to leaks. It simply said that leaks could impact groundwater sources.
Well, maybe that's what's wrong. Aren't there two issues here? Isn't issue one that you're challenging two things. Issue one is they should have done this site by site, right? And issue two is even if they were to do it generically, they should have done an EIS, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, I'm only talking about the first issue. I haven't asked you any questions about the second issue. So my question about the first issue, since your first argument is that they shouldn't do this generically, their answer is, well, we accounted for varying site conditions through conservative numbers. Now, if they're right about that, they still... You still might be right that even a generic approach to this requires an EIS, but I'm only asking about the first question. What's the matter with their argument?
Your Honor, I don't believe that they did a full conservative bounding analysis as to leaks.
Oh. What about fires?
I believe they did it as to fires, and I would agree with you, Your Honor, that as to fires, I mean, we don't contest that conservative bounding analysis. So as to fires, that means that we don't have a claim that those should be addressed on a site-specific basis based on the current body of evidence.
They abandoned the fires with reference to the second issue, that is to say that they still should have been a component of an EIS and not simply an EA.
Exactly, Your Honor.
And so your answer to my question about the leaks is that they just didn't do what they say in their brief they did.
Your Honor, what they did on leaks, and it's very clear in this lessons learned report, is that they assessed the 14 leaks that have occurred so far. I believe I have the right number. Six of which were from spent fuel pools. They found that they hadn't had any significant impacts on human health. And what they said is the biggest leaks, luckily, didn't leave the site. They remained on site, so they didn't have any possibility of getting into public water supplies. The smaller leaks, including the leaks from Indian Point of particular interest to New York, Connecticut, and New Jersey, the smaller leaks that migrated off-site had only a negligible impact. I mean, some of the leaks from Indian Point got all the way down to the Hudson. So in any event, Your Honor, basically what they said is that we had these two different scenarios, but they went on to say, but there's a potential there. So if there's a leak that's large enough and migrates off-site by getting into groundwater, it's, you know, kind of a hydrogeological question, if that happens, then there's the potential for a significant impact on human health, which obviously is of a, you know, huge concern to New York State, where we have 17 million people living in the immediate vicinity.
So just so I get to your point, you're saying because they identified that there was a potential problem from leaks, that shows that they didn't in fact come up with a worst case scenario to control for the danger of leaks. I'm afraid I don't understand your point.
I don't believe that they did come up with the worst case scenario, but more importantly, Your Honor, they said the potential is there. Mm-hmm. So even putting aside the site specific issue, their recognition of a potential is certainly enough to justify an EIS on leaks. And once there's one significant impact shown by the record, then the temporary storage rule should be invalidated, and they should proceed to issue an environmental impact statement.
EIS for the entire major project. Gotcha.
Pardon, Your Honor?
EIS for the entire federal.
Exactly. That's the way it works if there's one significant impact. I wanted to get back
to... actually out of your time, but... we've talked you out of it, and I'll give you two more minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. I wanted to get back to one question I think that Judge Tatel asked me. He questioned that don't the spent nuclear fuel rods cool down over time. That's correct, Your Honor, but at the same time, we have aging pools. I mean, these pools were constructed for a 40-year license period, and now we're talking about using them for up to 120 years, 40 years licensing, 20 years relicensing, another 60 years. So that's quite a long period of time, and NRC hasn't done any risk analysis to show that that the risk of leaks will diminish during that period. Your Honor, if I just might make one last...
You've got about 29 seconds.
Okay. Your Honor, I also just wanted to point out that NEPA covers all environmental impacts, and the environmental assessment didn't even discuss any non-health impacts, including the cultural impacts raised by the Prairie Island Indian community. So it should be invalidated for that reason.
I've run you out of time. I'm not sure cultural impacts are a necessary component of environmental impact statements, but
Your Honor, I believe they are under the CEQ regulations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll hear from Mr. Fettis for the other petitioners, the environmental petitioners.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Jeffrey Fettis, and I'm representing the environmental petitioners here today. New York just spoke to you about spent nuclear fuel storage. I'm here to talk to you about disposal. The agency admits, Your Honors, that the Waste Confidence decision is a rulemaking, and it also concedes that NEPA applies to this rulemaking. The Waste Confidence decision, however, with respect to spent nuclear fuel disposal, has none of the indicia of a NEPA analysis. It doesn't discuss environmental impacts or alternatives.
Could you start by explaining how they would do that? They don't know where the disposal site is, right? Or even what kind of disposal. So how would you do an EIS on? Do you want them to do it on a hypothetical one or on all the plausible alternatives? What exactly do you want them to do?
We want them to do an EIS.
Yeah.
And by the way, going back to the case law that commences with Vermont Yankee came to a head with BG&E in 1983, they can decide how they want to do this generic environmental analysis. But they have to do and take into account the impacts of spent nuclear fuel from the beginning, from the licensing decision all the way through. So the first thing they have to do is discuss the potential environmental impacts for at least in the most minimal NEPA analysis, NEA, and then an associated FONSI, which they haven't done.
Environmental impacts of what?
Well, the environmental impacts begin, Your Honor, with first geologic media leak. We know this for a fact.
It seems to me what you're really attacking is the decision Congress made to have a permanent storage facility. That seems to me what you're uncomfortable with. What are they supposed to be analyzing? Site out there, it seems to me you're quarreling with them analyzing the concept it needs to be a permanent storage facility. Is that what you're after?
No, Your Honor. That's actually part of what we're after in the sense that we think that the EIS that the NRC is setting up to do, we don't know how it will go forward and if it will have the scoping that we think it needs, by the way, which includes disposal, this multi-hundred-year-long EIS for long-term storage. That's starting to get at it, but that doesn't nearly get at what they need to take account now, which is the impact of spent nuclear fuel, the uncertainties, the costs, and also the potential likelihood that they may never reach
a disposal. That's what I was going to ask you. So is it the potential environmental impact of an ultimate decision that permanent disposal is not possible? That is, that the on-site might become permanent?
That is certainly part of what we think needs to be considered as part of the analysis they need to do.
I understand your, I think the right word is frustration about this. I get it. I saw it in the briefs, too. I mean, the agency is basically saying, look, we don't know where it's going to be, right? We don't know what its contours will be, but trust us, it's going to be there when we need it, right?
Right.
Yeah. Okay. And don't worry. We'll
make judgments that there will be a solution.
Yeah. And we'll overcome all these political problems, and when the nation needs it, it'll be there. Just cool it, right? I got your concern about that. But since Baltimore Gas and Electric says, you know, this kind of long-range judgment about the possible availability of the site is something we need to defer to, other than what you just said, which is considering the environmental impact of what might happen if there is no, ever, a permanent site. I still don't see what they can do.
Your Honor, BG&E allowed NRC the discretion in how it conducts its environmental analysis. And we agree that this can never be more than a prediction whether or not the Waste Confidence decision will actually be borne out. But this decision right now makes binding determinations on factual issues. It says that there will be safe disposal of spent nuclear fuel, that it's feasible, and that it will be available
for the licensing, for the relicensing decision.
Well, for relicensing, or actually for the queue of new reactors that are lining up.
Well, so is it the consequence of your argument that they in fact can't relicense anything because as they say, we don't know? In other words, if NRC has to do an environmental assessment of eventual permanent disposal, and at this point it doesn't know where or when that will happen. Isn't the consequence of that they can't relicense?
Not necessarily,
no?
Your Honor. I mean, they'd have to do the analysis and weigh the alternatives and weigh the uncertainties, and to the extent they can, under their own rules for EIS and 10 CFR Part 51, make sure that those analyses are as quantitative as possible.
Analysis of what?
An analysis of those uncertainties.
Other than the uncertainty of, I got one uncertainty. One is that there might not be permanent disposal. What other uncertainty is there?
Geologic media leak, the impact of this.
But suppose it's not in a geological. Suppose they find some other. Oh, I see. But won't the consequences, I see your point. But how do they know? How can they assess geological or the risk of geological leak without knowing where the site is? Isn't the risk of leak, geological leaks, vary depending on whether, say, it's in Yucca Mountain or under New Mexico?
Correct, Your Honor, but the 30 years of accumulated knowledge we do have, BG&E was not enshrined, and in the sense that we have 30 years of accumulated knowledge on spent nuclear fuel disposal that can go into that kind of generic analysis of uncertainties, alternatives, costs, that then can inform whether or not. And by the way, Your Honor, we expect this to be a generic EIS. We don't expect the disposal
issue.
Could
possibly be anything else. But now I think I understand your point. But you led me astray before because I asked you whether, what they're supposed to do is do an EIS sort of on all of the plausible alternatives. That's what you're looking for, right? You're looking for, let me just state it because I want you to tell me if it's right. Your view is that, look, we know there's been a lot of research on this over the years, huge amount, right? We know that it's going to be a geological site of some kind, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And so your point is that limits the options. True, there's a lot of variation in there, right?
Correct.
But they can look at those options and say, considering the options, the risk, the environmental impact are as follows, and I take it the riskiest one would be, or the most troublesome one would be, the riskiest option, right?
Well, the most troublesome one would essentially be long-term storage turning into de facto disposal because of we've simply gone beyond the time in which there's any reasonable sense that a repository could ever be developed. We don't know how that's going to play out, but we're really hinging on the Vermont Yankee finding that these issues have to at least be considered as part of the licensing process. And right now, the spent nuclear fuel disposal issue has functionally been removed from the licensing process, and not a whit of this accumulated experience will actually inform the licensing and relicensing queue that we have coming forward. I mean, basically, Your Honors, the agency's talking about a nuclear renaissance. The agency's considering a number of new applications and certainly many more relicensing. Despite that 30 years, not one whit of this experience is going to inform the environmental analysis. And we think the court should remand the Waste Confidence decision for further proceedings that are consistent with NEPA. And there, Your Honor, at bare minimum, they at least need to do an environmental assessment for spent nuclear fuel disposal. And if they think there's no significant impact and they could back that up, then they need to do a FONSI from that. But thus far, we haven't seen
need to do what?
A finding of no significant impact. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Well, you were kind enough to have the glossary in your brief that we require, unlike the government. Either didn't read our rule or didn't care about it, one or the other.
Okay. So
it's possible under your theory then that, and we'll ask counsel for the NRC about this, so I take it it's possible that the agency, what you want is you want them to look at the, since geological disposal is the option everybody's focusing on, and they've conceded that that's what it is, right?
Correct.
So you want an environmental impact assessment on that now, considering all of its possibilities.
The cost, the uncertainties, the likelihoods.
Why can't that be taken care of at the time they make a final decision?
Because one that runs counter to Vermont Yankees that still stands today, that we need to look at the impacts of spent nuclear fuel from the time it's produced and for several million years out, and we need to do it at the time of licensing, Your Honor.
I thought your point was is that this this decision is binding at the relicensing stage.
That was my next sentence, Your Honor, that it's binding factual determinations now, that if we don't challenge it now, we will never be able to challenge it in any licensing proceeding.
Well,
thank you, counsel, unless my colleagues have further questions.
Well, do you just suppose...
Okay. One of my colleagues does have further questions.
I hadn't thought about this, but suppose... I'm just thinking out loud here. I mean, suppose we were to say we understand that problem, and at this stage, NRC's determination's okay, but that it can't preclude a discussion of the issue at the relicensing stage. Suppose we were to say that.
That would be complicated in terms of its remedy. The only remedy we see, Your Honor, is remanding them back for an EIS that does consider these issues. Right now, the waste confidence decision and these binding determinations bar any intervener from bringing this matter up.
I see. What can you give me a sense of the timing? Do you know when these relicensing? We're talking about relicensing existing power plants and licensing new ones, right?
Correct.
Do you have any sense of the timing of
right now? Right now.
There's relicensing proceedings going on now?
Correct. There are relicensing processes that are ongoing right now.
I see.
Where some of the clients that I'm representing have intervened.
I see.
Thank you, counsel. Unless my colleagues have further questions, we will hear from the respondent.
May it please the court, my name is Robert Rader. I represent the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. With me at counsel's table today is John F. Fortas, Jr., our solicitor. Let me turn first to Ms. Wagner's comments about leaks. First and foremost, with regard to leaks, we did do site-specific analysis. We collected data from every site at which there have been unmonitored releases from the spent fuel pool. Those leaks were analyzed, and in fact, we did perform, as Judge Tatel said, a bounding analysis. We used dose calculations using public drinking water standards from EPA. We made bounding calculations, which are discussed in the joint appendix at page 281, 282. All of the data is there and shows that, as the NRC said in the environmental assessment, there will be no significant impact to public health or safety. Indeed.
Now, you're going to issue number two. What about the generic question?
The generic question, as I say, we did a site-specific analysis. We made a generic conclusion, but the generic conclusion that there is no overall significant impact to human health and safety derives from the site-specific analysis of the actual water samples that were collected from those sites.
And as water samples?
Yes, Your Honor. We sampled water. When the water leaks underground, we do hydrologic sampling.
To see how dangerous the water is?
To see how far it's migrated and if, in fact...
Did you assess the site-specific causes of a potential leak?
Yes, we have.
Like earthquakes?
Yes, we did.
Why is the agency saying this is a generic finding? Why aren't you just saying the state's
wrong?
Because
it didn't occur at every plant. It didn't occur at every plant.
So then it isn't site-specific, right?
Didn't occur at every plant? I'm sorry. Yeah.
There were not leaks from spent fuels. We have 100.
Everywhere where there was a leak.
You're missing my point.
That doesn't seem like it's so sequitorial to the question we're approaching here. Right. Why did you not do site-specific EAs or EIS? And your answer is, well, these things didn't occur at every one of the plants.
We know that.
I can't get from point A to point B very.
Your Honor, we have a fleet of 104 reactors. Mm-hmm. At that fleet, we have, and the licensees have detected, spent fuel pool leaks only at a handful of those facilities. There are no leakage problems in
the facility. That still doesn't seem to me to follow from the line of questioning that we're pursuing. We're trying to find out why you didn't do environmental assessments for each of these that would be under a licensure decision, as opposed to a generic. It doesn't seem to me to be an answer to that question to say that, well, things were different at some plants than they were at others. It would seem, if anything, to cut in the opposite direction.
With regard to, we are focusing now on the rule, which we promulgated in 51.23, which says there will be no significant environmental impacts associated with the storage of spent fuel at those reactors.
We understand that that's what we're talking about, but what we're getting at is this. You're talking about, we're all asking you about the antecedent question, namely generic versus site-specific. You keep responding by saying you tested the water where plants leaked. I got that. That's site-specific. You've concluded none of those were dangerous. But what I haven't heard is, what about the potential causes of leaks, earthquakes, the different locations of the pools, all of the other factors that could affect whether a leak occurs? And clearly you wouldn't say, well, we're not going to look at all the sites where there weren't leaks, because the water that leaked from the sites where there were leaks was safe. That's not responsive.
The task force, which the NRC directed to consider this factor, did look at the causes of the leaks and recommend...
Site-specific? Site-by-site?
They looked, well, obviously, Your Honor, they can only look at the causes of leaks for where the leaks occurred.
You can look at potential.
But you're essentially...
You found
it's risks.
A certain phenomenon that accompanies leaks.
Exactly.
You could examine each of the ones that didn't have leaks to see if that phenomenon occurs there.
That's what I'm trying to say. The report did provide generic conclusions, generic fixes, generic resolutions for all plants. It didn't just limit itself to the plants at issue. It said, here's what all of the licensees need to do to prevent, to detect, to mitigate any leaks that occur.
You're using up all your time telling us what we know. But our question is, what's the justification for doing the generic approach? It can't be that the water from the 18 plants where there were leaks wasn't harmful. That doesn't get you there. I mean, suppose they were all in places where there weren't any serious earthquake threats. Suppose there hasn't yet been a leak at a power plant at a nuclear power plant that's near the San Andreas Fault.
Or a high water table.
I don't see where, since the agency concedes there are site-specific causes, because in fact the agency is going to do site-specific environmental impact statements for this issue when it does relicensing. So it's conceded that point. I don't see, having made that concession, how it cannot do a site-specific for leaks here. That's what I don't understand.
Your Honor, that does occur, but it occurs...
What occurs?
Your Honor, during the licensing process for each facility, the NRC puts these facilities through rigorous design criteria review, right, and we determine that the spent fuel pools are safe.
Okay, so
we license
the agency does that. My question is, and that's for the 20 years of relicensing, correct?
It's for the 40 years of initial licensing, okay, followed by whatever issues come up in the 20
years.
But
for the 60 years following those periods, after the plants close down, the agency doesn't do that.
The agency has done that in regards to the issues that were raised before us and the issues that we developed in the generic environmental impact statement.
For leaks?
That addresses, including the leaks, that address the specific question of whether there will be significant environmental impacts associated with the storage of fuel after 60 years after the licensed reactor life. And we looked at all of these issues.
Then let me try to ask you the question this way. When we get around to writing our opinion, if we say the agency's explanation for having done a generic impact analysis here is that it looked at the water samples from every leak that occurred and found that those leaks did not cause any harm to human health, right?
That is correct. As far
and that's the reason NRC gives for doing a generic one here. So if we wrote that in the opinion, we wouldn't be leaving anything out?
What you would leave out is that we have monitored carefully and no other leaks have been detected at other plants.
All right, fine. That's it. Okay. So if that's the argument, then I just need to know what your argument is.
Okay.
That's fine. Great. Do we have time for the other issue?
We got time.
Oh.
We'll take time.
Do you want to talk about the other issue?
Yes, let's move on. The problem with NRDC's concerns about the creation of an EIS is that if you look at how this issue developed historically, it's really pounding a square peg in a round hole. The way this disposal issue came up years ago, as the court is well aware, is this court's decision in Minnesota versus NRC, where this court required the NRC to develop information on the issue of whether or not spent fuel could be safely disposed of after the reactor's life. And as such, it was always a safety issue. It's been developed in our rulemaking as a safety issue. The environmental issues associated with fuel disposal are covered in our table S3 and are a part of every licensing decision which result Baltimore Gas and Electric upheld. So we do consider...
I'm sorry, your brief says that the decision did not rely on that table.
It did not rely upon table S3, but Mr. Fettes is saying that we need an analysis of the fuel cycle and at the end of the fuel cycle and fuel disposal in reactor licensing. And what I'm saying is we already do that, but not by means of this waste confidence finding. We do it separately under table S3,
I see.
Which compiles...
position is that you need an EIS that reflects that.
They do say that, Your Honor, but the problem with that position is we have not proposed any major federal action that would significantly affect the environment.
That's part of what we're here to decide, isn't it, as to whether this constitutes a major federal action.
Well, you will have to decide that, but in fact, there has been no repository proposed. The only one that was proposed was Yucca Mountain. There was an EIS prepared for Yucca Mountain. And there will be an EIS, as Your Honor pointed out, there will be an EIS prepared for whatever repository is eventually proposed, either by Congress, by legislation, as they did with the nuclear waste
policy. Hold that thought while we're on it. I know we're taking this away from where we were, but you have the statement in your brief that, I'm going to find this exactly correctly. This legislative framework and the President's statements in establishing the Blue Ribbon Commission amply support NRC's predictive finding that a political consensus will be eventually reached to designate a repository site, such as the HLW permanent disposal capacity will be available when necessary. We don't owe any deference to your political prediction. B, that isn't just a non sequitur, it seems to me to be completely at odds with itself. You've just related the history of how the law, the congressional resolutions, had required the construction of the Yucca Mountain site, and then you tell me that we should reason from the fact that the President killed the Yucca Mountain site and put in some other commission, that therefore there's going to be a solution. If anything, it sounds like this is one more time that the frustration of the petitioners reflected reality.
I think many of us are frustrated, Your Honor, but the fact remains that the Nuclear Waste Policy Act contains a mandate. It says that the federal government shall be responsible mm-hmm. for the spent fuel produced by reactors.
And they've done such a great job of complying with that mandate that we should reason that it's going to happen?
Your Honor, we understand that it will take time for this political gridlock to become unlocked.
But there are other statutes at work here, and one of them is NEPA. And NRDC's argument is that when the agency makes a licensing or relicensing decision, that is a decision that requires environmental assessment.
Right.
We all agree with that.
Yes, sir.
And it's at that point that the agency is authorizing the production of more nuclear waste. And it's at that point, where, having done that, where you need an environmental assessment of that. And it seems unbelievably circular to us, maybe circular is the wrong word, to say, well, we don't need to do that now because we don't yet know where it's going, and therefore it's premature to do the environmental assessment. It just doesn't make sense under NEPA.
Judge Tatum, we fully concur with you
Oh, well then.
That the environmental impacts of operating a nuclear power reactor and producing waste, not just at the back end, but through the entire fuel cycle, the milling of uranium, the mining of uranium, the extraction of the uranium, the enrichment of the uranium.
We get that. Now
all of that.
To the question.
All of that has to be analyzed.
Yeah.
And it is.
Where?
It's
where is
analyzed. That? It's compiled. Those figures are compiled in what we call table S3.
Okay. Now this is interesting to me. Because maybe you need to help me. Maybe I don't understand this. I thought, so you're saying, look, when they get around to licensing a particular plant or relicensing one, it's S3 that resolves the question of environmental impact of long-term storage, right?
No.
Permanent
storage. For the environmental impacts associated with operating that reactor, which includes ultimately
long-term.
The impacts from disposal. But the impacts of operating the disposal facility itself and constructing that facility will only be analyzed when the facility is actually proposed.
But this lawsuit is not about the ultimate disposal site.
This
case is not about the ultimate disposal site. It's about what's being done with the nuclear,
that's exactly
nuclear
our point.
Fuel in the meantime.
Exactly, Your Honor. That's our point. That until a site is actually proposed, as Judge Griffiths was saying, it's hypothetical.
Then you don't need an EIS for the Yucca Mountain equivalent now. But you do still have the question of whether you need an EIS for the rulemaking that permits the continued temporary, quote, storage of the fuel in the meantime.
We do have an environmental assessment for that.
For what?
The generic.
A generic environmental assessment for the storage of spent fuel up to 60 years after licensed reactor life. We do have that.
Okay, but we're talking about the next issue, the NRDC issue here. Well, what's your response to NRDC's argument that, look, we understand you can't do a site-specific EIS for a permanent disposal site because you don't have one. But the country's been thinking about this for 30 years. There's a huge amount of research that's on it. Mm-hmm. There's a pretty big consensus about what it's going to look like. It's going to be geological disposal, correct? We all know that.
Yes, sir. It,
the problem is where, right? And what are the particular details? Now, what NRDC is saying, if the agency is going to license the creation of more waste, that it should assess the environmental impact of that long-term disposal possibility right now, before.
I understand, Your Honor.
Why is that?
And the answer is that what triggers the environmental impact statement required under NEPA is the proposal of a major federal action.
Yeah.
That has not occurred yet.
That brings us back to
you say it has not occurred yet. Now, you don't seem to understand that possibly we're going to be deciding whether it's occurred. Don't just tell me it hasn't occurred. Tell us why it hasn't occurred. I mean, the rulemaking that seems to permit the continued temporary storage of the spent nuclear fuel, why wasn't that a major federal?
With regard to Yucca Mountain, Your Honor, it did occur, and there was an EIS prepared.
Forget Yucca Mountain for the moment.
That's done.
Answer my question.
Right.
Why isn't this rulemaking constituting a major federal action?
Because there are no environmental impacts associated with a safety finding that reasonable assurance exists that a means of disposal will be found and available when necessary. That finding itself is a safety finding emanating from this court's decision in Minnesota versus NRC. It's a safety finding. It does not trigger NEPA any more than any other reactor safety finding triggers NEPA.
Okay.
The NRC makes a number of safety findings in licensing every reactor. This is just one more of them. You can look at regulations at 50.57C, and you'll see all the requisite safety findings for licensing or renewing the license of a power reactor. This is just one more, just part of it, Your Honor. It's one more ingredient that goes into the licensing of a reactor. But in and of itself, it does not propose a major federal action triggering NEPA.
Can those questions be revisited at licensing of each of the entities? Can those safety questions be revisited at each of the licensings?
No, because we've decided them generically.
Well, see, that's
decided them generically, so then if they can't be revisited at licensing, why doesn't this constitute a major federal action requiring an EIS, or at least an EA?
Because the major federal action that has occurred is the licensing of the nuclear power plant, and that does have an EIS. But Baltimore Gas and Electric...
That EIS will not include the environmental impact of permanent long-term storage.
But it does, Your Honor. That's what I'm saying.
You just told Judge Sintel it wouldn't, because it's resolved by this question.
There's two different EISs. We really must be clear on this.
Okay.
There's an EIS for each reactor, and the EIS for the reactor includes what Baltimore Gas and Electric approved as Table S3. That table compiles all of the environmental impacts associated with the entire uranium fuel cycle, including disposal. So disposal's in there. There is a separate EIS associated with a major federal action that occurs when the NRC, years from now, will accept another application for the actual repository. And in regards to that repository,
first of
it is a major federal action.
That you're talking about, how does it account for disposal? I mean, it clearly can't account for the site-specific repository that will someday be accounted for. So how does it account for disposal?
It accounts for the disposal in terms of what the Baltimore Gas Electric approved of, the zero release concept. We have determined that the releases from the repository, when built and constructed, because of our knowledge of science and engineering, that the releases to the environment will be so close to zero they can be deemed zero. And Baltimore Gas and Electric approved that. So in the Table S3, with regard to the buried waste, the releases are deemed to be approximately zero and therefore negligible.
How can that determination be made before the NRC has decided upon the final repository?
For the reasons Your Honors have already mentioned. We know the basis of the repository. We know it's going to be deep geologic repository. We know the science and technology involved in building it. And we are reasonably able to predict, as we did in the Baltimore Gas and Electric case, that the releases from that repository will be negligible or near zero. That's already been approved. We don't have to revisit that.
I just have a fact question.
Yes, Your Honor.
Can you explain to me the relationship between the WCD before us today and Table 3C? S3, whatever
yes,
it is.
It is somewhat complicated.
Well, that's why I asked the question.
It is. I appreciate Your Honor's question. Table S3 is a compilation of all of the environmental cost expressed in terms of releases to the environment of radioactive materials throughout the course of the uranium fuel cycle, mining uranium.
Including permanent disposal.
Don't
keep going through the list for us. I said, don't keep going through the list. We got it.
Okay.
We understand the cycle. The end of the cycle is the permanent disposal. Right. That's what we're interested in.
Table S3 includes all of that, Your Honor.
Okay. Now what?
That is an input to each licensing decision of a nuclear power reactor.
Gotcha. So when the first, when there's a licensing decision in the future or relicensing, that table resolves that table. It's on that table that the agency rests its conclusion that at least for the last stage of the cycle, namely permanent disposal, right?
Yes.
There's no significant environmental impact.
Exactly.
Okay. Now, what's the relationship between that and the WCD?
None, because the waste confidence findings are not trying to estimate the cost to the environment of operating the reactor.
And what effect, what I meant was, I'm sorry, I asked the question the wrong way. What would be the effect of the WCD at the relicensing decision?
In relicensing decisions, we do not reconsider the environmental impacts of disposal. We've already done that in licensing the plant.
You've already done it where?
In licensing the plant. We don't go through that again in relicensing. We've already considered the entire fuel cycle for the licensing.
Okay, well then, what about, start with licensing then. So suppose are there new licensing decisions online coming?
There are.
Okay. Tell me, what's the role of this WCD there?
The role there is that the finding four supplies the requisite finding that there will be adequate disposal capacity available when necessary for that plant.
Isn't that the same as this table? The table...
Table S3, Your Honor, says that the environmental impacts of disposal will be negligible for the uranium attributable to that reactor because releases from the repository will not affect the environment.
I see. So
and that's specific
so
to that reactor.
So the WCD says there will be a depository of some time, some kind, right?
Yes.
And the table says, and whatever it is, it will have minimal environmental impact.
Exactly.
That's the two things. So NRDC's argument is that at that licensing stage, okay, the table says there will be no significant environmental impact, but they're questioning the WCD's judgment that at the right time, when we need it, there will be a disposal site with minimal environmental impact, and they're saying that they will not be able to challenge at the licensing decision. In other words, they're saying if that decision is wrong, and if that predictive judgment is wrong, then the agency will be licensing the production of nuclear waste for which there is no reasonably likely permanent site. And it will not have thought about the possibility that on-site storage is in fact permanent. That's their argument.
Exactly.
What's the matter with that?
The answer to that argument is that requires a judgment on whether or not the record sufficiently supports the NRC's predictive judgment that the requisite repository capacity will in fact be available when needed. And that's just a straightforward record administrative law issue. That's not a question of creating a NEPA record.
How does an administrative agency know how to do that?
Well, how do we know, or what does the record reflect as to how we're going to know what that adequate solution is, when it is needed, why there's any confidence that it's going to be available, other than a political predictive judgment to which we do not owe any deference?
Let me break that down. That's a good question. I'll break that down for you.
I thought it was pretty good.
The first reactor, we have determined that there's reasonable assurance that the spent fuel can be stored safely, temporarily, for up to 60 years. The first reactor to reach, after license life, The first reactor to reach that point is the Dresden Unit 1 reactor. And that's in our rulemaking record. You can find that.
Where is that?
The Dresden reactor is a reactor in the United States, was licensed.
I was just asking you where it is.
Your Honor, it's in the Midwest. Oh. I'm not certain.
Okay.
But in any event, its license has already expired, and that 60 years for that reactor will run in 2059. So Dresden is the first reactor that will hit the 60-year mark. So we have a window of from now until that reactor, at a minimum, for this gridlock to be resolved. And the NRC has found that in the meantime, we have confidence that the spent fuel can be safely stored without significant environmental impacts up to that point.
Well, of course, they're challenging that too.
Yeah,
they are.
Yeah,
they
assuming you're right. Let's assume for a minute you're right. Now, let's assume we were to rule that the generic approach was fine, okay, and that you're okay on that, and that there was no environmental impact statement needed. They still are saying that, though, rests on an assumption that there will be a geological site available when it's needed. Isn't it?
That's correct. But here again, this is a question of reviewing our record to determine whether or not the NRC had a reasonable basis to determine that a site will be found, will be characterized, and will be available when needed.
You know, you say you share the same frustration that the NRDC does about the inability to get a resolution of this issue, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
You know, there's a very simple way to get it done, and that is a ruling by this court that the agency, in fact, needs to do, that the agency can't license or relicense without this ultimate decision being made, that you can't produce nuclear waste under NEPA without knowing the long-term environmental consequences of it, which includes where it's going to go.
I'll
resolve the political dispute.
I know this is indeed frustrating for all of us.
Wouldn't that solve everybody's problem?
Well, Your Honor, I would point to.
I guarantee there would be a lot of pressure on Congress to get this thing fixed quick. Right?
But I don't think that would be appropriate to use the political process to solve such an administrative.
I wasn't suggesting that. I was just suggesting if the decision you've made, agency's made, is arbitrary and capricious because it hasn't accounted for the long term, that decision, perfectly lawful decision by this court. And I'm not saying that's what we will do. I have no idea. But that would certainly call everybody's attention to the problem, right?
I think the entire nuclear community and Congress and the President are well aware of the problem. The question is the political fracture in solving the problem. But I would like to point out that other countries have solved this problem. I mean, what we recently sent you the report of the Blue Ribbon Commission, and what they said was we need a consensus-building, inclusive process to develop agreement on where the site's going to be.
That's wonderful. But that this was is such good news to learn that we do need that. that
sometimes you have to dot the I's.
I'm shocked there's gambling going on here.
Exactly. But, Your Honor, that has been successful in Finland and Sweden, and that's what we cited in our rulemaking. This can be done. And we have,
there's ever been any doubt that it could be done. From the very beginning, there's been pretty much consensus that probably this could be done.
Yes, sir.
Maybe not how exactly, but the current rulemaking doesn't tell us where, when, how, or even really the criteria by which we'll know that this supposed safe solution is going to exist out there in the future when it's needed. But you don't know when it's going to be needed, and we don't know what it's going to be.
Well, remember, Your Honor, the way this issue was originally formulated back by this court in Minnesota versus NRC. No one has ever required a target date. There's no court decision, no statute, no regulation that requires the NRC to establish a target date.
NEPA requires an environmental assessment, an environmental impact statement. That's always been the case. Don't tell me that because there's not a specific requirement in your act that you don't have to do something. Why doesn't an adequate assessment of the impact on the environment include some information as to what that solution is going to be, when it's going to be, and how it's going to be done, or at least an admission that we don't know? I mean, environmental impact statements do not require that you fix everything. They just require that you tell us about it.
And all you've said is that you're confident that it'll be get done sometime in the next 60 years, right? That's what you've told us today.
I'm confident.
And your basis for that confidence is a natural optimism about
it? No, the basis, the confidence, Your Honor, is first of all finding one, which is that the creation of such a repository is technically feasible.
Yeah, they're plenty. Well,
we have the science and engineering to do it.
Nobody's questioning that.
We have example of other countries that the political consensus can be reached.
You mean
we have the mandate.
Yes,
sir.
We're going to make a political judgment based on Finland? Finland's got a perfectly good government, but it's a little different.
No, the NRC has made a decision based on the success of other countries.
First thing, you have to find another country that has a federal system.
That's a technical judgment. I don't see NRDC arguing, the states or NRDC arguing, that this isn't technically feasible. Am I wrong? They're not making that argument, are they?
You're correct. You're absolutely correct.
Okay, so, right. And we couldn't second guess that judgment anyway. That's the last kind of judgment you get a court to second guess.
But the fundamental point remains that the only thing that triggers NEPA and the requirement of EIS is the proposal of major federal action. That happened with Yucca Mountain, with that facility. We did get an EIS.
That has nothing to do with whether this is a major federal action or not.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
We know it happened with Yucca Mountain. That's not our issue.
Yes.
Our issue is whether it's happened here. Forget Yucca Mountain. Tell us why this is or is not a major federal
action. The mere finding of sufficient repository capacity will be available when needed. It does not in and of itself propose any matter.
But you tell us that that can't be revisited in relicensure. Did I misunderstand you on that?
The safety finding itself cannot, but there will certainly be a licensure.
This is a preclusive finding. So if it's a preclusive finding for the relicensure, then why is that not a major federal action?
Because the relicensing has nothing to do with the licensing of a repository. The licensing of a repository will occur years from now. We'll have its own EIS.
You're taking us back to a different question again. If this is where the spent nuclear fuel is going to be, the fact that it's not called a repository, it's instead called a temporary storage, does not answer the question as to whether this is a major federal action.
Well, that's true, but as for the temporary storage, Your Honor, we did an environmental assessment. Now, New York has argued there should have been an EIS, and the court does have to decide that question, mm-hmm. whether or not the environmental assessment was sufficient or whether an EIS should have been prepared. But that is a different question from the issue of whether or not an EIS is somehow triggered by the mere finding that sufficient capacity will exist when needed.
If that's a part of the reason why you're saying there's not a major environmental impact, and not an environmental impact, why an EA is sufficient and not an EIS, then I don't understand the somehow that you stuck into your prior sentence. Their argument is that it's triggered by it. It isn't somehow triggered by it. It's triggered by it.
Well, because the temporary storage rule does not propose any long-term disposal. It's completely apart from that.
It could be 60 years on that one plant. It could be longer than that.
Your Honor, spent fuel pools are very robust structures in design and construction. We know how they operate.
Wonderful. It's sunny outside, but that doesn't speak to the question of whether the storage of nuclear fuels for 60 years is something that requires an environmental impact statement. Now, that statement may say what you just said once it's produced, but it doesn't answer the question of whether it needs to be produced.
Well, the assessment that we prepared, it has exhaustive detail. It essentially conforms to the EIS requirements, except in terms of its labeling. But in effect, if Your Honor, of course, will review the record, and I think you'll be satisfied by your review that we did, in fact, conduct an exhaustive review of all of the safety and environmental issues associated with the storage over a period of 60 years. Bear in mind, as the court has already recognized, after the plants have been shut down, the impacts will be significantly reduced. All we're talking about, the impacts of passively storing spent fuel for 60 years where it's been for the last 40 or 60 years. Plants are licensed for 60 years. We've licensed the plant for an initial 40 years. We license it, in many cases, for an additional 20 years. That's 60 years of operating experience to understand how a spent fuel pool works. It doesn't take a great leap of logic to say, if we understand that, if the effects over the 60 years operating are not severe and produce no significant environmental impacts, then over 60 years, when it's not in operation, there will be no significant environmental impacts. We've looked at all of the comments that have been submitted. It's an exhaustive record, and I'm satisfied that when the court reviews it, you'll find that we did a job suitable for the environmental assessment.
We have to pass on cases from a lot of different agencies, not just yours. And you're probably not familiar with a case called Bechtel versus Federal Communications Commission. But in that, we roughly stated, and this is not a direct quote, this is a head note, but that where the agency is making a judgment based upon a predictive judgment, the expectation is that there is a correlative duty to evaluate the policies over time to ascertain whether they work. You made predictive judgments. Now you're making another predictive judgment. Why shouldn't you have to make a new environmental assessment as to whether the first predictive judgment was correct by this time? You know, it would seem to be fairly, maybe costly, but it would seem to be fairly possible for the agency to have done an environmental impact statement, knowing that you should have been able to predict that would be a controversial decision. I know you didn't make that decision, but the people that did are not here and you represent them, so. Why is it not correct that they could just have gone ahead and done an EIS and saved themselves a lot of litigation?
Your Honor, the agency recognizes the extraordinary public interest in this issue and for that reason has agreed to prepare an EIS for the longer-term storage that is now possibly contemplated. And we are, in fact, in the process of scoping an EIS, which will be prepared over the next several years and is slated for availability in 2019. So it will cover the longer term and will be in the form of an EIS. We recognize.
Is that in the record of this case?
I'm sorry, you're.
Is that in the record of this case?
Yes, it is.
Where is it?
The rulemaking record in the Waste Conference decision refers to the creation of the long-term EIS, and it's also covered in our statement of facts.
That means that we could find it somewhere in these four volumes. Do you have a more exact location for this?
Yes, Your Honor. It's in our statement of the facts in our brief, starting around page 13, I believe. Counsel will help me, but there is a 2 or 3 page discussion of that long term EIS, beginning at page 14.
14.
Yes, Your Honor.
That gives citations to the JA at...
Yes, it's discussed in the waste confidence decision itself.
Okay. JA 251 is that?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Okay, well, the court has talked to you long past your allotted time.
I appreciate
unless my colleagues have further questions, we will let you lead a retreat and we'll hear from the intervener.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court, my name is David Repka and I'm counsel for the Nuclear Energy Institute. The NRC's waste confidence decision and temporary storage rule addresses a very specific, very carefully defined issue that resulted from the Minnesota versus NRC case in 1979 before this court. The NRC has used the rule for almost 30 years to address that issue, has updated the rule when new information has caused the NRC to relook at the issue of the time periods involved or the technologies that is involved, and it's avoided the recurring litigation of this issue in individual proceedings. The NRC has made two decisions, as Judge Tatel, I think you've recognized, one to conclude that the environmental impacts of storage during this period beyond the operating license life of the plant until removed for disposal by the federal government, they've made a determination that can be made generically. And number two, they've made the determination based upon bounding analyses that there's no significant environmental impact. Both of those determinations are well within the technical expertise of the agency. The basis for those conclusions are amply documented in the rulemaking itself. And certainly the determinations are in an area where the agency is entitled to, I think, the highest degree of deference.
Some of the determinations are, but you wouldn't contend that their predictive analysis of political behavior was within agency, is entitled to deference, would you?
I think that they do have expertise in that area, and I don't think that issue is fundamental to the issue that's addressed in the waste confidence decision, which is the impact of storage during the defined period. The institutional and political barriers certainly exist.
How can you define the period or predict the need without having, or how can they predict that something will be available at the time of the need without making a political assessment?
Well, I think they have made the assessment, and there's nothing that precludes them from going back and updating this rule in the future if the needs require it. But I think fundamentally they're relying on a number of factors, not only their review from repository programs around the world, but also the Nuclear Waste Policy Act itself. And we can all express frustration about the status of
to the Act itself. The National Environmental Protection Act would be the one I would come to, and I probably should have asked the attorney for the government, but we asked him enough things. How are we going to structure or cabin a precedent about this generic environmental assessment without creating precedent that is going to affect environmental impact statements for the whole range of government agencies in ways that might be very difficult for us to see, but we're accustomed to seeing many EISs and many EAs come into this court from all branches of all areas of the federal government, and I don't recall ever seeing one this generic before. Aren't we opening maybe not a Pandora's box, but somebody's box if we approve this kind of broadly generic environmental impact statement?
Well, A, this is not an environmental impact statement.
Well, this kind of EA.
It's an EA.
Even more dangerous.
Exactly.
And the conclusion is within the expertise of the agency. The courts have certainly approved generic determinations based upon EAs.
Sure, but the question here is, I mean, no question about it. Generic EAs are okay, but The question is whether it's appropriate here.
Yeah, what would we be creating with this breadth of it?
And our
a precedent that would hold all kinds of areas of the federal government, or all kinds of critics of the federal government.
Which is an argument that was specifically made in the NRDC versus NRC case back in 1978, that the NRDC petitioned for a halt to further reactor licensing based upon the lack of reasonable assurance of a repository. And the court specifically rejected that at that time.
Well, no, we were asking about the generic issue and whether that's appropriate. And, you know, under our Sierra Club decision, we take a lot harder look at a decision not to do an environmental impact statement than the ultimate review of the impact statement if they do it. And so the question we're both the chief judge and I are getting at here is, I'll just ask you, you've told us we have to defer to the agency's judgment about this. What is the agency's judgment about this?
The agency.
What is the agency's explanation? What do you think is there? And I want you to look to give me a reason from the record. What is the best argument from the record that justifies their decision to do this generically, given that the agency has already said that for the licensing and relicensing decisions, it will go site by site?
That, again, we're focused on the impacts of storage during this defined period. And the basis for their conclusion and the bounding nature is the fact that, A, there's already established regulatory compliance. So, Judge Taylor, you mentioned seismic earlier. All of these structures, whether it's a spent fuel storage pool or a dry cast storage facility, will be seismically qualified.
Okay, then why is it going to consider it when it does relicensing?
It is. Those issues are considered in the context of initial licensing. They would be considered.
I said relicensing.
Certainly, the compliance with regulations are addressed in the context of relicensing.
But you're missing my point. The agency has said it will consider it site by site for the relicensing. It will look specifically at the leakage issue for these pools at that particular site, whereas it isn't doing it now, doing it generically.
The NRC has proposed a rule, and it's a proposed rule only, in which they would look at leakage as a Category 2 issue for relicensing, but I don't think that equates to a finding that leakage will cause a significant environmental impact. That relates to leakage from the entire facility, not just spent fuel storage.
Yeah, right.
And they are doing an EIS for license renewal in covering all the issues germane to license renewal. So they're looking at that rule in the context. They're saying, well, as long as we're preparing an EIS supplement, we'll look at any case-by-case variations in that context. It's, again, it's a proposed rule. And I think it's, again, important that that relates to the operational aspects of the plant as well as the storage. So it is really not equatable completely to what we're dealing with here today, which is extended storage through this period post-licensing. And, again, I think the basis for the generic conclusion is that the plants have been licensed. They have been shown to be in compliance. The monitoring programs based upon all the operating experience are in place. Those will continue in this renewal period. The rulemaking record that Counsel for the NRC referenced at the Joint Appendix 281 to 82 specifically addresses the leakage issues and talks about the bounding analysis they've prepared.
You're not literally a party, and therefore this may not literally be a standing question, but how are your clients hurt if we require the NRC to prepare an EIS?
I think what happens is then that issue becomes an issue in every single future licensing case. And the injury, which is when we're talking about spent fuel storage, to the industry becomes piling injury on top of injury, is that has to be relitigated case by case. It's a recurring issue. It truly is a generic issue because we're talking about hypothetical storage in the future. And I think that's a substantial uncertainty. And when we're talking about nuclear power plants, new plants, relicensing, the one thing we do know about power planners and project developers is they abhor uncertainty in these projects. And I think that's the largest injury for the future of the industry.
Unless my colleagues have further questions, thank you, counsel, and we'll hear rebuttal.
Appreciate it.
I don't know who. Does anybody have any time left? Okay, we'll give you 2 minutes apiece for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, counsel for NRC mentioned the long-term EIS that's going to be done. That just points up the totally inconsistent treatment of these periods of time. There's an EIS, a generic EIS, for the 20 years of a relicensing. Then there's an EA resulting in a finding of no specific impact for the 60 years after operation. And now they intend to do an EIS for the end of that 60-year period. This makes no sense.
What's your response to the argument you just heard, which is that the difference between, and my question is about the generic question, the difference between this and the relicensing is that when you're doing a relicensing, they're obviously looking at the whole plant.
Your Honor,
and that's why that's different from this generic. Here they're just looking at the pools.
Your Honor, of the 14 leaks, six of those were from spent fuel pools, and NRC hasn't done any kind of risk analysis to say that the risk drops so sharply of leaks from spent fuel pools that we don't have to look at spent fuel pools. In addition, NRC said that it had found that the impacts were significantly reduced during the 60 years. It hasn't found that. It's not in the record. We know that the fuel will cool down during that period, but we also know these pools will age a lot, and they haven't looked they haven't done a risk analysis as to what is going to happen in these pools during those 60 years, and that's one of the things that should be done in an environmental impact statement. Here on site specificity, we've had two leaks from the pools at Indian Point. The leaks have migrated off-site. We've been lucky. There hasn't been any, it hasn't impacted public drinking water. But we're now in a proceeding to relicense Indian Point, and New York State cannot raise these leaks in that proceeding because we're barred by doing so by the temporary storage rule. We'd like to have a discussion in those proceedings about what mitigation measures can be taken to ensure that these pools last for another 80 years.
Unless my colleagues have further questions. No.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll hear from the other petitioner.
Thank you, Your Honors. I think you heard the NRC's version to us of heads they win and tails we lose. The NRC told you that the waste confidence decision and their findings, it's not a major federal action, it has no relation to Table S3, and it does not trigger NEPA. That's wrong. It's a rulemaking that they even acknowledge, but it also makes binding factual determinations on spent nuclear fuel disposal, as is well established now on every single NRC licensing. And there's not a whit of discussion of a NEPA analysis, either in an EA form or an EIS form, in the waste confidence decision that's binding going forward. And the fact that disposal and how it will come about is unknown or uncertain is the precise reason NEPA exists. Uncertainties heighten the need for NEPA. They don't excuse it. And if the court has anything further.
Unless my colleagues have further questions, this case will be submitted. We'll take a break.